Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I heard about a weird video online where a teenager asked for help. What's going on with that?
Right. There was a 16-year-old girl that was, I guess you could say, being driven in a car by a 61-year-old man, and she was asking for help. Now, you know, if you're in a vehicle and you don't want to let the person who I would say in this case, abducted you to know you're trying to get help, the best thing you can do is signal for help. And it just so happens that there's been a signal that TikTok users have been spreading around, the violence at home signal for help. And if you look this up on TikTok, it's basically you hold up your hand with your thumb across your palm and all four fingers up, and then you lower them over the thumb. You trap the thumb. That means you need help. And so this man is driving, and this girl had gone missing from North Carolina. And there was a person driving along in Laurel County, Kentucky, who noticed this teenager doing the signal for help. And because they had seen this gesture on TikTok, they knew just what it meant. And they took it seriously and called, I believe, the Laurel County Sheriff's Office.
And I'm assuming they came and pulled the car over and did a welfare check and figured out this guy was not her father and shouldn't have had her in the car.
Right. And this person had crossed multiple states. His name was James Herbert Brick, and he was charged with first-degree unlawful imprisonment. They also found a phone that he had that, well, we'll say allegedly portrayed a girl who was a minor between the age of 12 and 18. This is where TikTok for, you know, all the people that don't take it seriously, think it's, you know, stupid or silly, whatever it is. This is something you got to give it credit for. So many people have used TikTok for good, and this is just one of those things.
I'm always happy to hear about when something good comes out of social media, because I don't think social media is stupid or childish. I think most of it's toxic, and it's always good to see things that aren't that way.
Right. It's a great story with a great ending. We don't know what would have happened, but for her to make those signals meant she knew she was in trouble. And luckily, someone was able to help. Furthermore, if anyone's interested, we do have our own TikTok. It's at Gen Y Pod. We try to put up videos about upcoming episodes, or sometimes Justin gives commentary on something. And one of the things I also like that you do, and you've only done it a couple times so far, is you give a little behind the scenes commentary about the show, about perhaps our original music or whatever else you come up with to talk about.
Yeah. And just the other day, I actually helped out another podcaster, The Vanished, with some audio, and I need to make a TikTok about that still.
Awesome.
So tonight's case, Aaron, is about three random murders that law enforcement have a hard time investigating, and they happen somewhat far apart, so they're not going to tie them together. And it's a weird mystery with love triangles and murder for hire, which is, you know, I understand that we've covered a lot of wives and husbands who have hired people to murder their significant others, but typically it turns out that they're hiring an FBI agent or something to that effect. And in this case, though, they found somebody who was truly a hitman. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight, we're talking about the case of John Wayne Hearn, who, because he had gotten a bit older and was no longer employed in the military, decided he wanted new adventures, new employment, new opportunities, and decided to place some ads in Soldier of Fortune magazine offering his services. But the calls he got, the requests that he got, led him down a different path than I think even he was expecting.
And that name, John Wayne Hearn, I mean, the only other John Wayne, you know, as Wayne is the middle name, is John Wayne Gacy. So mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be named John Wayne anything.
Good advice. This takes place in Gainesville, Florida, for the most part. And this is the mid-80s, Justin.
Oh, my favorite time.
Those were the good days, right? A lot of good music out then.
There was good music.
I don't know. What were you listening to in the mid-80s, Justin?
You know, for the most part, I listened to a lot of the, you know, the synth pop kind of stuff. The typical 80s, which was like Flock of Seagulls and Duran Duran.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah.
Duran Duran. They just came out with a new album and it's phenomenal.
Yeah. But I will say that by the late 80s, I had discovered Ministry and Skinny Puppy and
metal.
Metal. A lot of metal.
Yeah. Same. But getting into this case, Justin, we all know how these things occur. It's because people start to resent or have a problem with their significant others or boredom. I think we'll get to that, but that's really the setup here.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the victims. You talked about these murders.
It was January 6th, 1985. Cecil Beatty was 33 years old. He was shot through the front window of his home while he slept on the couch. Now, if anyone were to just put that down in front of me, I would say, well, it was either a drive-by shooting where they were just shooting randomly, or it was a stray bullet that entered a home and hit somebody that was asleep. Like, this couldn't have been intentional. But Cecil happened to be involved in a custody battle with Marlene Sims at the time of his death.
Let's talk about this custody battle, though. Marlene was his former wife.
Yeah.
And so they were involved in this custody battle, and it was pretty heated. Neither one wanted to give ground. So this was really just, you could say, a person of interest for the police. But yeah, I mean, would she have done this?
I don't know. It seems random enough.
So the next murder was the murder of Joe Bannister. It was close to 11:30 p.m. on February 2nd, 1985, when the Bradford County Sheriff's Office received a call via 911 reporting a car crash. This was in a drainage ditch on a remote stretch of highway. So officers were dispatched, and they found Joe Bannister, who was 41 at the time, just dead behind the wheel of his car. He was slumped over the wheel. The lights were on, his motor was running, and it looked like the car had just either been run off the road or driven off the road.
Now, he was bleeding from the head, so they thought maybe he had hit his head during the accident.
Right. They attempted CPR to save his life, but they couldn't revive him. And they knew who he was because they found his driver's license and he was pretty much intact. There wasn't really any damage to obscure his face. So because they thought they were responding to an accident, they're taking their time. They're looking around at the vehicle, but they don't really see how this vehicle would have been, you know, pushed off the road or anything. The truck was pretty much intact. So they're like, this isn't the kind of accident that would cause someone's death. They're looking over the vehicle and they notice that the driver's side window is shattered. But since there's no collision or anything, this lets them know that something else probably happened. So they're looking all over and they keep confirming what they thought originally, which this doesn't look like an accident. So that's when they send his body off to the morgue and they will have an autopsy done. At 1:20 in the morning, Officer Winston Barber drove over to Deborah Bannister's house, Joe's wife, to give her the bad news that her husband is dead. And Deborah broke down. She said, my husband and I, we drove separately to a friend's house for dinner and I left well before he did. So then she asked him, where's Joe? Where did you find him? And he said, well, we found him in his vehicle in a ditch and that his body was sent to the morgue for an autopsy. And she didn't want him to have an autopsy done. She didn't want his body cut up. And he said, well, it's procedure and, you know, it's not your call. February 21st, 1985, a man by the name of Bob Black arrives home after running errands, and his son is the first one to go inside the home, and he makes a terrible discovery. He finds that his mother has been shot to death. These are the three murders in this case. And of course, because each of these individuals had been shot, but in different circumstances, there's nothing really that connects them as far as an investigation goes. That's where you need a lot of work and you need some luck. That's something this case has.
So the detective has told Deborah Bannister about her husband's death, and he's gotten a little pushback about the autopsy, but it's February 3rd that they get the autopsy results. And as they suspected, Joe didn't die in a car crash. He died from two gunshot wounds, one to the back of his head, which was like a grazing wound, and then another one through the side into his brain, killing him instantly.
So once again, the officers need to contact Deborah. They're telling her, your husband was shot to death. But she has a weird question. She wants to know what the caliber of the weapon was that killed her husband.
Yeah, I would say that would be the last question on my mind if I heard about my husband or wife being shot. I would want to know where, who, and what are you doing about it, but not what kind of gun or what kind of caliber were they killed with. That's just weird.
Well, everyone reacts differently, right? It's just 2 days later that the Bradford County Sheriff's Office got a call from investigators at the Alachua County Sheriff's Office. This is the office that's investigating the murder of Cecil Beatty, who we talked about already. Now, this is because officers that were investigating Cecil Beatty's murder were kind of suspicious of Marlene Sims. It's the only real lead they had because of the custody battle we had talked about. Now, they became more suspicious when, on February 7th, Larry Foster, who is Marlene Sims' third husband, came in to tell the police that he feared for his life. And he told the police about a suspicious man that had been hanging out with Marlene's sister, Deborah. That's her older sister, Deborah. And he even gave them a name, John Wayne Hearn.
That's a good lead for them. But who is this John Wayne Hearn that he's referring to?
Well, that's something we'll get into in a bit. But the thing is Larry had spoken with the police. And then after that, he and his wife got into an argument. And he got hit in the head pretty hard. They said he had a skull injury. Now, Marlene said, he hit me and she ran over him trying to escape. Larry didn't really recall what happened, but his family insisted that Marlene hit him intentionally. So the fallout here is that Larry Foster, he's partially blinded after being hit. And of course, the district attorney, speaking to the media, called it very suspicious. But now that they have a name, Justin, and the person who had given him the name may have been almost killed, they want to follow up on this John Wayne Hearn guy. And here's the weird thing. Deborah Bannister went to her husband's funeral, and she was accompanied by a man who she was introducing as her long-lost cousin. But Joe's family, they didn't buy it. They'd never heard of this guy. They were watching them, and they were thinking, that's not a cousin. They also spoke to the investigators in Bradford County.
And this cousin was being weird at the funeral. He was acting like the life of the party, and he wouldn't leave Deborah's side. Just a lot of red flags there.
So investigators look into John Wayne Hearn. They find out he was a 38-year-old Vietnam veteran who had worked as a truck driver. He had four previous marriages and lived in a studio apartment near Atlanta. He was having a custody battle of his own over his son, who lived with his mom in South Carolina. He had been investigated by the Georgia Bureau of Investigation in the past because he had placed ads in Soldier of Fortune magazine. And as you know, this is something that the different bureaus will keep an eye on.
Because in the back of that magazine, there's the classifieds. And you'll get some really interesting stuff back there, especially in a Soldier of Fortune magazine. And being that he's a Vietnam vet, the war's over. He doesn't have a lot going on in his life. You know, he seems to be kind of a loner, can't keep a relationship or a marriage together. I'm sure he's trying to figure out a way to feel more important than he really is. And that's why he decided to put ads in the back of this magazine. And, you know, depending on where you read or what you see about this case, some of them are more or less, I will do bodyguard work or security work for you for a couple $100 a day, to I'll do dirty deeds, done dirt cheap, just like the AC/DC song.
Now, these days, they don't have that, do they, Justin?
No.
And it's probably because of this case. Well, it is because of this case. So back in September of 1984 is when John Wayne Hearn paid $40 for an ad to appear in an issue of Soldier of Fortune magazine. The ad read, ex-Marine, 6769, non-vet, XDI weapon specialist, jungle warfare, high-risk assignments, U.S. or overseas. Now, why would he place it in that magazine, Justin?
Well, that's your target demographic. it's a gun magazine. It's a soldier magazine. It's everything that manly men want to read about.
Military news, right?
Yes.
And most of the readers back then were Vietnam veterans. And this magazine allowed readers to post these personal service ads back in the day. And, well, apparently John Hearn was getting multiple calls a day. Now, he's not the only person to put ads in the magazine, of course. That's why they had it made, you know, it was available. But yeah, it was said that he was getting 3 to 5 calls a day. And most of these requests were for contract killings or for transporting drugs, weapons, even assaults.
Yeah. And John Wayne will say that he wouldn't reply to any of them except for when a woman wrote in.
Yeah, this was Deborah Bannister. The weird thing is Deborah has said different things. At one point, she even said she met John Wayne Hearn for the first time before she ever met Joe Bannister. But there's something that happens when they meet.
Sparks fly. And John Wayne Hearn is in love. Love at first sight. And apparently Deborah, you know, this guy is a lot more exciting than her current husband.
So Marlene Sims was subpoenaed. The authorities wanted her to do an interview. This was for February 8th, 1985. Well, she didn't come alone. She came along with her older sister, Deborah. And when the detectives asked Marlene about the night that her husband was murdered, she said that Deborah left her children with her while she and Joe went to dinner. So kind of an alibi?
Yeah.
And because Deborah's right there, the police want to talk to her too. And they say that there was about an hour difference between Deborah and Marlene's statements about when Deborah picked up the kids. So there's a discrepancy there, a red flag, if you will. Now, Deborah also said that John Hearn wasn't her cousin because they asked about him. You know, that's what she had told everyone at the funeral, but she didn't tell detectives that. She said, he's a friend. There's no romance here, nothing like that.
I mean, she really put him out in arm's reach. Yeah, it's on February 13th. The Alachua Sheriff's Office brought John Hearn in for an interview, and he was talking to the detectives about his ad in Soldier of Fortune and that he could make up to $300 a day doing private bodyguard work. When they asked him about his relationship with Deborah Bannister, he said it was strictly platonic. He, again, kind of distanced himself from her, saying, you know, we're just friends, we don't know each other that well. But when they ask him, where were you on February 2nd? He says that he was with his mother in South Carolina. Well, the detectives are going to go speak to his mom, Mary Watson, John's mother, at that local police station. And she verified John's alibi. And they asked her about Deborah Bannister, and she said she had no idea who Deborah was. So that detective stepped out of the interrogation room and saw a young boy sitting in the waiting room. And he goes up to the boy and he goes, hey, who are you? And he says, well, I'm, you know, so-and-so's son. He's like, okay, you're John's son? He's like, yeah. Are you from Florida? And they sparked up a little conversation. And the son said that he had saw Mickey Mouse the previous weekend. He's like, oh, who were you with? And he said, well, my dad, John, my new mom. And the detective's like, your new mom, huh? And he pulled out a picture of Deborah. He said, is this your new mommy? And of course, the son said, yeah. At that point, the investigators had caught them in a lie. And they knew that there was a lot more going on between Deborah and John, and that Mary Watson, John's mother, was covering for them. And this all contradicted John's alibi, by the way.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So now this detective has some ammunition when he goes back into that interrogation room, does he not?
Oh, absolutely. And he goes back in and starts talking to Mary Watson and says, hey, I know you lied to me and I'm investigating this murder, so I'm going to go ahead and charge you with conspiracy to commit murder if you don't cooperate. And let's just say that Mary Watson, well, she broke down and she came clean about her son's alibi. She said that they were not together on that night. And then she even went one step further, Aaron, which this is weird to me, but back in the 1980s, we didn't have ways to, you know, digitally record a phone call. We had these things called answering machines back then that had a cassette tape. And she apparently had recorded phone calls between John and Deborah. And she hands over these tapes.
Yeah, and that's important to note. She handed over tapes, multiple tapes. And this is where she was probably wrestling with, do I cover for my son or do I talk to the police and give up anything I know because of, you know, he's blood, but also what he's doing is wrong.
And they threatened her with a conspiracy. So, you know.
Right. But I don't think she would have had these tapes to give to them if she wasn't at least considering doing the right thing. I get what you're saying. They forced her hand in a way.
Yeah.
But man, she could have just not had those tapes to begin with if she was really all in on protecting her son.
True. She could have just came clean about the alibi, but providing them with all this evidence of their relationship, their affair, and even them conspiring to commit murder.
And these tapes are damning. I mean, not only do they get the clear picture of what was going on between Deborah and John, you know, professing their love for each other, but also they have it on recording that Deborah is giving details about her husband's schedule. So they can put all that together. So what else does Mary give them?
A photocopy of a $1,000 check made out to her son. He had it sent to her address, and the check was from a man named Bob Black, who lived in Bryan, Texas. So the detectives contacted the Bryan Police Department, and the officers there said that Sandra Black had recently been gunned down in her home by an unknown assailant.
So, Justin...
Coincidence?
What must this feel like? What must this feel like when they have three different homicides and they have one name connecting them all? This is pay dirt. This is where they've really hit on something big here. Because without this turn of events, of them going down the right roads, they could have missed it all.
If the detective hadn't just stopped by and talked to the son in the waiting room, this whole case could have gone differently. Also, if John Wayne Hearn had just committed these murders and taken off, he would have been long gone. But John Wayne Hearn was in love with Deborah, so he wasn't going anywhere.
The other thing to note here is that since the officers have this name, John Wayne Hearn, Marlene and Deborah know they know of him. Now they're concerned that time is running out. So they tell Mary Watson, you better get a hold of your son and tell him to turn himself in for his own safety, because we don't know what's going to happen. And of course, they're worried that Marlene and Deborah may plot to kill him. Because, well, if he gets taken in and he talks, they're really in trouble. What happens March 15th, 1985?
Well, John Wayne Hearn has turned himself into the police in Texas. And it's weird because they had him in custody for several days and he kind of gave them sort of a rigmarole of a story, but he ended up telling them everything. He told them that it all started when he was looking for work. He was placing ads in Soldier of Fortune, and he received 10 to 20 calls a day. He says that it was in October of 84 that Deborah Bannister contacted him, and they agreed to meet, and she was so young and attractive, he just fell in love. They met at a Shoney's Big Boy restaurant. I remember those and I miss them. In Georgia, Deborah told him she wanted someone to intimidate her sister's ex-husband, Cecil Beatty. This is where it all comes full circle.
Yeah, she was hoping that with his pressure that Cecil would back off and Marlene would get custody of her kids.
Yeah.
And this is something that's reported in every story you read about this case, but at the end of that meeting, that first meeting between Deborah and John, she kissed him on the nose and he just completely fell in love with her.
Yeah. This is a guy that was down on his luck. All the excitement in his life is over. And now he's getting attention from this woman and he's able to do things for her and make her happy and get paid. He's on top of the world.
So he said how he made plans to relocate to Gainesville, and when they pulled up phone records, they found that there were 37 calls from Deborah to John between October of 84 and January of 85, when he finally moved to Florida. So there's the problem, though. To have someone killed, at least typically, it costs some money, doesn't it, Justin? I mean, we've heard of cases where you can pay someone a few $100, but in this case, the request was for $30,000. But of course, Deborah and her sister, they don't have that kind of money.
Yeah. And they're trying to negotiate with John Wayne Hearn. And of course, when he's got a crush on her, he's going to come down. And he apparently doesn't know his worth. So they end up agreeing to $10,000.
And this is after she changed her request from intimidation to murder. Now, you have to understand, it's not so much he doesn't understand his worth. I think it's because he's sleeping with this woman. So maybe she gets a discount, right? It's a third of the original cost, $10,000. And apparently, it wasn't even Deborah that got him to bring the number down. But I think she has something to do with it. What we hear, though, is that her mother, Iris Sims, is the one that to say, please bring the cost down so we can afford this.
So the whole family's in on it.
Apparently. Now, they have to raise the money some way because they don't even have $10,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Iris and her husband, Frank, decide to invite her mother, the grandmother in the family, down for a visit to Gainesville. You know, she agrees to it. And apparently, Deborah commented, wouldn't it be a shame if grandma's house burned down while she was in Gainesville?
Oh, God.
So she came down for Thanksgiving. And when she arrived, Deborah and Marlene basically headed back out of the house, drove 5 hours to go burn their grandmother's house down. They broke into the house and they apparently used varnish remover in the house and then set it on fire. And they arrived home the next day. Now, the police were suspicious because, well, this grandmother hadn't left town for 50 years. So what's the luck that she leaves home for the first time in 50 years and her house burns down?
Uh-huh. Then they get that insurance policy and get a lump sum of money.
Yeah, so this insurance money came through on January 2nd, 1985.
So what you're saying, Aaron, is they could have afforded the $30,000.
Well, we'll get into this. But the insurance money came through, and the next day, Marlene called John, who was back in Atlanta, and they agreed to meet at a motel in Gainesville the next day. Now, she paid him his $10,000 in $100 bills, and he used $300 of that to purchase a shotgun. Marlene went over to her ex-husband's house, Cecil Beatty, to pick up her kids, and she stole a box Cecil used to store insurance papers. I wonder why.
Yeah.
Now, here's some information that comes through. John, sure, he was being told he'll be paid handsomely, right, to murder Cecil Beatty, but he actually drove past Cecil's house twice, thinking he wasn't going to do it. But he drove by a third time and finally stopped the car and got out. And he walked up to the window. Now, remember, you talked about it earlier. You were saying, seems so random.
Yeah.
Well, for him, it was good luck because there was Cecil just there inside the window there, and he was able to shoot him and then get out of there real quick. He probably thought, well, I didn't leave any evidence. So on January 7th, 1985, Marlene called Cecil's insurance agent, but she was told, you know, sorry, but you aren't listed as a beneficiary of this $30,000 life insurance policy. So you can imagine how happy she was to hear that. So now they have to tell John, yeah, we don't really have your money yet to pay for Cecil's murder.
I'm just glad that this goes so poorly for them because it's just such a cluster of a situation.
And Deborah had dreams for some of the money too, because she wanted to use some of the money to build the dream home for the two of them so they could be together, have a happy life.
Mm-hmm.
And they even opened a joint bank account where Deborah signed her name as Deborah Hearn. And you know how John's son called Deborah mommy? Well, Deborah's kids were calling John daddy. Platonic. There was some more information about how John targeted Joe. And it was because Deborah left the party about an hour before Joe did. So all John had to do was wait for Joe's vehicle to come along. But you know, even before Joe came along, John had stopped Deborah, you know, because he stopped her as she was driving through the area. And he made sure that she really wanted this done. And she said, you know, get on with it, basically. No remorse, no second thoughts. You know, I'm not trying to say that John's this pure of heart guy that's being put into this tough situation. I'm just saying of all the people involved, he's the only one that seems to have second thoughts. Now, he still carried out the murders. Don't get me wrong. He's still a murderer. But I'm saying it's interesting that he's trying to tell Marlene. He's trying to tell Deborah, do you want to think about this a little more? No.
It's almost like after that first one, once they got a taste for it, they were like, nah, all bets are off now. We want this.
Yeah, it was working in their favor. And John said when he spotted Joe's car, it was about 11 at night, but there was too much traffic for him just to, you know, shove the vehicle off the highway, as it were. So he got his gun and followed Joe down a country road. And that's when he pulled up alongside and shot him twice. But, you know, because of like what you're saying, where they got a taste of it. Well, after these two murders, Deborah is telling John, you should do this more often, you know, because it's bringing in money, of course. And that's when Bob Black contacted him in January of 85. But, you know, the first time, John turned him down. But Deborah said, no, you can't turn this down. Bob Black also was a Vietnam veteran, and he read Soldier of Fortune.
And I was expecting at this point for John Hearn to maybe push back a little harder because he had been murdering men, but now he's being asked to murder a woman. And I guess I've watched too many movies where there's this code, you know, no women, no children, but nah, John, he seems to go ahead with it.
And we'll get into what happened with Sandra in a minute, but this thing that's really significant about this is John didn't accept this offer from Bob Black until he walked out of the sheriff's office after the first interview. So he was being questioned by the authorities, and then he was released. And that's when he went and called Bob and said, all right, I'm going to take the job. And that's where that $1,000 cashier's check came from. It was a down payment. And there was also a handwritten note. If there is any way you could schedule your plans to conclude with my being alibied out of town this weekend, it would help considerably. And here's the thing, Bob Black, he was having an affair. It was with his first cousin, and he promised John $10,000 to kill Sandra Black, his wife. And here's something that's really awful. He said that his wife's really only failing was that she was slightly overweight. I mean, you could read that any way you want.
It just gets worse and worse.
Now, here's the thing. Before Sandra was to be killed, Bob talked to her and said, you know, I want to get a new life insurance policy going. So he had her sign and pay for a new $100,000 life insurance policy.
Wow. They're the worst. Like there's so much paper trail here. It's a joke almost.
Now, Bob met up with John at his home. They needed to stage the scene so it would look like a robbery. This is why Sandra died. She just happened to be home when there was a robbery and she was killed. So Bob, of course, left the home so he'd have an alibi. And John waited to ambush her when she got home from work. He was in the dining room. And when she got in there, he snuck up behind her and shot her in the head. And this is something that I think is, you know, if you're looking for how this gets worse, Bob Black intentionally sent his son in first so that he would discover his mother dead.
Way to ruin a kid's life. But when you're hiring contract killers to murder your wife, then I guess you don't really have that many morals anyway.
So we talked about how John Hearn had fallen for Deborah. He loved her. And this is obviously one of the reasons he was committing these murders. But it was after Sandra was murdered that Deborah talked to John and said, we need to break up. You need to run away. Also, Deborah decided she wanted to try and sell some of Sandra Black's jewelry. So you can tell, I mean, John tried to do whatever he could for Deborah, and this is how she thanks him.
Yeah. But once Deborah gets wind of John's mother being questioned by the police, that spooks her, and she immediately cuts things off with John.
And Bob Black, well, of course, he wants to collect the life insurance money, the $100,000, but he doesn't really have any time to talk to the police about his wife's murder. The authorities, they have this case put together. There's really no mystery at this point. They've gotten enough interviews done. They have the recordings. They have the confession from John Hearn. Deborah Bannister and Marlene Sims were arrested April 15th, 1985. Deborah was charged in connection with Cecil's murder, along with Marlene, Frank, and Iris Sims. So this is the family. They appeared in court June 9th, 1985. Before they could ever go to court, though, Marlene got a plea deal. In February of 1986, she pleaded no contest to conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and arson. Her sentence, 5.5 years in prison. Deborah also pleaded. She pleaded no contest to conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and received 30 years. Frank and Iris pleaded no contest to being accessories after the fact and received 5 years probation. So a whole family brought down. So Deborah had pleaded no contest in the case of the murder of Cecil Beatty, but when it came to her husband, Joe Bannister, well, she went to trial. And what happened at trial, Justin?
Well, this time around, Deborah was looking at a long jail sentence, and she was testifying at trial about her affair with John Hearn, and she denied ever planning to kill her husband. But John had pretty much gone against her at this point, mainly because once she cut him off, he had nothing to lose. And they had all of the tapes from his mother, so things weren't looking good for her.
During the trial, she wanted the jury to know that she met John Hearn at a truck stop in 78. That's before she moved to Florida to marry Joe Bannister. And she talked about meeting John again in December of 84 to get away from home and think. But she's basically setting this up as, yeah, there was an affair with John Hearn, but I didn't plot to kill my husband. So she tried to put it off on John, but the jury didn't buy it. And I think that's because the jury believed John Hearn, because he testified against her. So
she would end up being found guilty of second-degree murder in relation to Joe Bannister's death. She got 17 years. So even though John and Deborah are pointing the finger at each other, he's saying that she's the mastermind, she's the one that hired him, all these things, John is still enamored by her. John is still in love with her. And there's a moment during trial where she's fiddling with the ring, I guess, that he bought for her. And after the hearing was over, he was bragging to one of the lawyers saying, "Did you see? She was fiddling with the ring. She was showing me that she still cared about me." It's pathetic. It really is.
The Black family files a lawsuit against Soldier of Fortune magazine because of them allowing this ad to run, and that it basically precipitated the murders, especially of Sandra Black. So John Hearn testified on October 13th, 1988 in a deposition, and he talked about all the calls he received after posting the ad and even getting a request for a political assassination. Now, he claimed that he met four different Vietnam veterans, and he named them as Don, Jeff, David, and Warren, and said that he had hired them to carry out assignments and was going to accept a request to bomb the Oregon commune. But he decided in the end that the commune was too heavily armed and it wasn't worth the risk. But the magazine, their defense team, conceded that the ad brought these two men together, but they insisted that the publisher didn't know the ad was for illegal activity. And you have to admit, Justin, they kind of have a point. You know, I mean, you can look at that and does it really say I'll kill people? No, but I mean, what would they expect, right? But is this enough to cover for them? That's the question.
I guess I think of a more modern time when they went after Backpage or the Craigslist categories and said that it was human trafficking when there were escort services or private massage services being offered. And they went after those websites for those activities. And this is very similar when they're going after Soldier of Fortune.
So the family's attorney, the Black's family attorney, said that because of this magazine ad, Hearn murdered three people in 45 days. Well, Hearn agreed with that. He said if the ad was never run, he wouldn't have killed anybody. The jury found Soldier of Fortune magazine liable for Sandra's death and ordered them to pay $9.4 million to Sandra's surviving son and mother.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
Bob Black went to trial. John Hearn testified against him, said that Bob first met him to discuss selling a gun collection, but after a few conversations, he requested help in killing his wife, Sandra. We don't really need to go through any more details on this. This is an open and shut case. You have the murderer testifying, so what else can you do? Bob Black, found guilty of capital murder, he was sentenced to death and executed May 23rd, 1992, at the Texas State Prison at the age of 45.
And that's why you don't mess with Texas, because hiring a hitman gets you the death sentence.
And he had tried to save his own life. You know, his appeal was basically an argument that PTSD was responsible for all this. But yeah, that didn't save him. No one bought that story. They said there was way too much planning involved. He was too determined to do this. I think the PTSD, what would have worked better if he hadn't hired someone else to do the job?
Exactly. That's not how that works. But the defense, and anyone's got to defend themselves however they want.
Yes, but there were people at the time who knew Bob Black who said that he had made comments that he wished he could kill his wife, but he couldn't do it himself. Now, this Soldier of Fortune lawsuit, where they ended up having to pay $9.4 million, well, yeah, that didn't end up working out, because in 1989, a federal appeals court threw out the award and said that the verdict imposed too high a standard on the magazine. I take that to mean that ad, as it was.
Yeah, it didn't reach the threshold where you could prove that that's what it meant. And a similar thing happened in the Backpage and Craigslist ads, is they went after them hard for that stuff. But then when it was all said and done, it was all dropped.
Deborah Bannister was released from prison in 2004. John Hearn remains incarcerated in South Carolina. Now, I actually looked up his page. You know, you can look up prisoners' pages on the internet, describing everything from where they've been, what they're incarcerated for. And it seems like lately he's made a few trips recently to other locations for medical reasons. Now, some people feel like, since Deborah was so deeply involved in these cases, that she basically got off light. I mean, she's no longer in prison.
Yeah, she's gotten out since this case. You know, but then again, this was the mid to late 80s when they went to trial.
Do you think it would be different if she were sentenced today?
I'm not sure, just because there's so many different factors and variables. You know, it just depends on the prosecutor, it depends on the judge, and it depends on if there were any plea deals. I think that I would want to think that she would have gotten a longer sentence today, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think she did get favorable sentencing. I definitely believe that she was involved in pretty much every step of this, but you know, you're right. It's up to the prosecutor. It's up to the district attorney. This isn't always fair, but the important thing is, no matter how many times John Hearn asked, "Are you sure?" he definitely needed to be put away for life. This isn't someone you want loose, is it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I'm sure that he might have put those ads in the back of Soldier of Fortune with better intentions. But as soon as the calls started coming in, I think this gave him some sense of purpose, some sense of excitement, and it was going to go this direction no matter what. And nobody twisted his arm. Nobody forced him to do this at gunpoint. He was the source of all of this violence.
All I would say is that what we've already kind of alluded to, which is I think he wouldn't have done all this if he didn't fall in love with her. He made it a point to say that he had turned down all these offers prior to meeting Deborah.
It's possible.
Again, you have people who, you get the right two people together, things happen that you never thought were possible. Never miss an episode of Generation Y. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. Our TikTok is at Gen Y Pod. Our Instagram is at Generation Y Podcast. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.